You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to a new episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Your two friends since first grade, now dads reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm JB.
And I'm Eddie. And on today's episode, we fly to the Australian outback to review The Rescuers Down Under. But before we get to today's movie, JB, how are the kids? How's the family doing? Everybody doing all right?
Yes, they're doing good. We are in that weird mode where we are nearly coming around to a special occasion for my son. So you start getting packages in the mail leading up to a birthday. And we've tried to grab them and hide them before he sees them. But he knows something's up, and he loves when packages come, like every full-blooded American does, and probably anybody for that fact. And so we start getting the packages in, and we're trying to get them upstairs into our bedroom as fast as possible so he can't see what's happening. Like when we buy something we know we can't, we have a bigger gift we want to get him, and we know we're not going to be able to put that into a package or whatever. And so we're like planning, okay, we'll have to go after he goes to bed so we can get it into the house and into the shed as fast as possible. But recently,
is he super inquisitive? Is he like, what is that?
What's that? Package truck. And we just got a gift recently from somebody, and it was a build your own kind of car thing. I don't really know how to describe it. It's like you kind of build the car, not just like it's fully
formed. Don't describe it too much. He may listen to this podcast and find out.
Well, it doesn't really matter because I guess the other morning, my wife had the car here in the bedroom and trying to package things up or whatever. And he came bursting in, sees it on the bed and goes, Lego car. And I'm just like, oh no. So there's still time before his birthday. And we've been having to like prep him. Sorry, buddy. Like, we're not gonna like you got to wait till your birthday. And every single day it's like Lego car. We have to wait to your next birthday. And so we're in that weird space of having to like rein in the excitement.
Oh my, that is so much fun. We're still in that phase where we can give Lewis like a gift that he helped like pick out at the store. And he totally forgets that he had helped pick that out. And it's like brand new.
Yep.
Like we could take a toy away for 2 months and like hide it, like a toy that he's played with regularly, hide it, put it away for a couple of weeks, wrap it and give it to him. And he's like, new toy. I know that's quickly fading, but it is a nice skill to have.
Yes. We're still holding on to the fact that we can talk about the gifts we want to get him while he's in the room, but he doesn't know the difference. If we pulled out the Target app, that would be a completely other thing. So today, this is our second movie in the 1990s. So we actually want to talk a little about some Disney news that's just happened and something
some
just happened.
Some current events.
News. Eddie, what just, I kind of felt it coming, especially after Tenet was released to very, the money was
lackluster.
Box office was way, way low, which we know because we're in the pandemic still. But we've now started to see the trickle effect to movies being pushed back again.
Right. So Disney has just been like pushing back all of these movies that should have been, you know, released since March. The first major one was Mulan was pushed back. And then they did the whole premiere access on Disney Plus, which is interesting because as I've just kind of anecdotally talked to people who are Disney movie fans, nobody's gotten it.
Nobody.
But all of the articles and stuff that I'm reading is they're saying actually Disney did halfway decent with it. So I don't know. I think the sign that Disney didn't do as well as they had hoped for was the news that came out this week that Black Widow is being pushed back from, you know, it was supposed to come in theaters in November. It's not going on premiere access. It's coming out in theaters not until March 7th, 2021. I think that proves
full year. full year pushback.
Full year from its release. So it pretty much resets the whole Disney calendar. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a similar announcement with Soul, the new Pixar movie that's also supposed to come out in November. I just see them going, this isn't worth the gamble.
Several months ago, I started looking as theaters started saying, hey, we're going to start coming back out. And I started looking at, okay, when should I reactivate my AMC Stubbs account so that I, or A-List, is A-List? It's A-List, right?
A-List, AMC, yeah. You've been out of it for so long.
I've been out of it. It's been forever. So I just started to see, hey, when should I be reactivating my account for this? And so I was like, well, what month will there be a lock? So Tenet, I'm like, I'm just going to do a one-off for Tenet. And I'm glad I only did that because every time I checked in, I was like, okay, so October, I think there will be more movies in October. We'll look forward to that. And I checked again. I'm like, wait, all the movies in October are now moved back to November. And now I just saw the news about Black Widow getting moved back to next year. And I'm like, oh no, we're going to be doing this again. Like AMC and everybody opened back up to try to get people back into the theaters. We had the big release of Tenet and nobody showed up for it. I think it made 18 million, 10 million, yeah, like really, nothing. Really low. It should have made hundreds and it was tragic. It's tragic that now we're having to now see the further ramifications of this, where it's like, okay, now it's getting pushed back even farther. For this one, it's one of the first ones. I think you're right. Some of the other ones that we were hoping for are probably going to get pushed back again because no one, at the end of the day, they don't want to lose on 80 million, like 80%, 90% of the money they were going to make.
Well, and you got to think about it from a Disney's perspective. You know, they manage now so many different studios and specifically movie releases.
Yeah.
So you're not just talking Disney animation, live action, Fox, Marvel, Star Wars, which, you know, there's no movies in the pipeline, Pixar, you know, so they want to make sure that they're not competing with themselves. So this is just going to see this trickle effect of movies all throughout their whole system.
Yes.
Which Disney movies are arguably the most powerful movies right now. So all the other studios are going to have to shift as well because they're like, we don't want to compete with a big Marvel movie. And so, yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see it all. I think, honestly, what I'm most sad in all of this, probably the Disney movie I've been anticipating the most is the Jungle Cruise movie with The Rock and Emily Blunt. It was supposed to come out summer of 2019. And again, they were playing that whole game where they're like, well, we just had a big release of Endgame. Let's maybe, and then they pushed it to Christmas.
So they shot this thing like 5 years before it's actually going to release.
And then they pushed it to Christmas of 2019, but then that's when Rise of Skywalker comes out. So they're like, we don't want to compete. Let's push it to summer of 2020. Oh, pandemic hit. So, I mean, now we're looking 2021, which is going to be like 3 years since they filmed this thing. And it's just sitting in the can somewhere. It better be good. Like, you've had plenty of time to work on this thing. It better be the best CGI you've ever produced. Like, come on,
folks. One frame out of place.
Pull a Cats on us here. Like, make this actually really good.
Exactly. So let's not wait any longer. Let's jump into the reason everyone is here, not just for our Disney news, but for our Disney reviews. Eddie, do it for us.
Cue the Disney-ish sound effect.
Rescuers Down Under. I'm so excited to talk about this, but we're going to start with the IMDb description of what this movie is for anybody who hasn't actually seen this. And I don't know that the description helps. At times, the RAS agents, no understanding of what that is for if you haven't seen it, Miss Bianca and Bernard race to Australia to save a little boy and a rare eagle from a murderous poacher. One, they really should have put that these are mice somewhere in here. These are mice. These are like... And no one knows what the RAS is. So I'm a little upset by that because I've got so many feelings about this. But Eddie, what did you think revisiting The Rescuers Down Under? And were you excited to revisit this? Or how did you interact with this movie when you were younger?
Yes. So this was, again, I think a resurgence of some of the childhood feels. Mm. You know, like Little Mermaid, I wasn't super into as a kid. We watched it, but like Rescuers Down Under was huge. And I even remember the moment realizing Rescuers Down Under was the second one. Like, I thought it was a movie unto itself.
It is kind of a movie. You don't really need...
You don't need to see the first one, no.
I went back after watching it and rewatched part of the first one just to, like, make sure I knew. But I didn't really need to. I kind of was more out of nostalgia of, like, oh, let me go back a little bit deeper to watch it. Because we started, for those of you jumping in right now, the reason we haven't talked about the Rescuers of the first one is because we are rewalking through the movies from our childhood starting at 1988. So what I found interesting was the first Rescuers came out 13 years before this one in 1977. And if you go back and watch that, the animation is like completely different. The level, the amount of CGI in there that they're using, it's like night and day. 1977 feels very, very ancient in 13 years of progression of technology.
So what's interesting is they made this movie purely from a financial standpoint. They sat down and said, okay, in the past decade and a half, what has been our most successful movie? And okay, it happened to be The Rescuers. And Michael Eisner's just like, make a sequel. We need money. Make a sequel. And that's purely how it got greenlit. And so that's how we get The Rescuers Down Under. This is such a fun kind of, I love the different characters and the multiple storylines that are all kind of converging and intertwining all throughout.
Yes.
All of
even
this.
They even gave Jake his own little incentive as he's trying to kind of work his way in between Bianca and Bernard. Like the whole side story with Wilbur as he's like having like back surgery and all these kind of things. Just it's unnecessary, but it gives that just him. He's not just like the random big bird that's kind of funny, lands and then moves on. Like he's
so Wilbur is voiced by one of the greatest comedic actors of all time, period. John Candy. Like, amazing. An albatross, of course, named after Wilbur Wright. Orville was the albatross in the first Rescuers movie that kind of helps them.
Those are the nuggets you're here for. Those are the nuggets you're here for.
So you kind of see the other side of all of that. And yes, that they just give every little character.
Joanna, the monitor lizard, has her own personality.
You just give everybody to shine. You give everybody that room to really shine. McLeach is voiced by George C. Scott, like who is a very kind of established dramatic actor. They brought in some, you know, Bob Newhart is in this. Eva Gabor is in this. These are some really big names over the time. And these are just well-rounded characters that just kind of have these fun little story moments. And what's so fun about it is it keeps a fast pace the whole way through. Because you're bouncing from character to character, you never feel like this movie slows down on you at all. And so I think as a kid, I remember that just kind of holds your attention the whole time. And definitely going back through and watching it now, you still feel that.
What I love is the attention to detail in this. Those cued so many memories for me as I went through, even just like the way he's stroking the feather when he first gets it feels so real, even though it's animated. The ruffling of Marahoot's feathers, the grass and the eggs, even just like when they send off the SOS message and you've got the chain of events to get the first mouse who experienced this kid being taken, and then they're like doing the Morse code, and then they're in the crash
bouncing
plane,
around the
the thing, like switching all the things, and even like the detail of the thatch work on the cage, to where they went to the extra detail. They didn't just have like a cage here, but they had like got the very dense netting so that nothing can get out, because then the rescuer, they could have gotten out of the cage and then helped do everything. It brought back so many memories of rewatching as a kid, even just places where I remember watching it while my dad was in a meeting and I'm sitting there watching with a bunch of other kids. all of those memories just from all the little tiny details, and especially coming off the heels of DuckTales, watching DuckTales, and then this. When you mentioned before that, and if you go back and watch our episode about DuckTales, Eddie talks about how DuckTales was actually made by the television side that made the TV show. Because I watched these so close together, I felt the crazy difference
in
animation alone, and all of its little intricacies of like, man, these are super, super amazing craftsmen making all these little details in this movie.
So it's funny, you can't really talk about Rescuers Down Under without talking the animation, is because it's just so beautiful in this movie. I mean, the whole time where Cody is riding on the back of the eagle, and you're just kind of going all throughout that, like, honestly, watching it now as an adult and a fan of the Disney parks, I was like, I want a Soarin' ride based off of Rescuers Down Under. Cody. Like Soarin' with Cody, or I don't know. The animation is just so beautiful. And I agree with you, like the detail of the feather, the opening scene with the flower petals kind of floating off. This is a notable kind of advancement for Disney's animation style. This was actually the first movie they began a partnership with Pixar over.
Interesting. So
this
is the domino.
This is the first domino to fall. So Disney purchased CAPS, the computer animation production system, from Pixar in order to produce The Rescuers Down Under. So before, they would have to hand draw everything, hand paint everything, even any movement, they would have to use the multi-plane camera effect for Disney animation. They digitized that whole process. So all of the animation and coloring is still being done by hand, but it's all being put into a computer and then animated. The production side of it is being animated by a Pixar system called CAPS.
And you can feel it in the opening sequence when you're going across the way, and you've got the logo coming towards you, but then you keep on going for a long, long, long time until you arrive at Cody's house.
Right. And so you get this, you know, some things are completely hand-drawn, some things are inked and drawn in the computer. You know, it's pretty rudimentary at that moment in time, but you start to get this blend, which really elevates the movie, especially if you go from like Little Mermaid animation to The Rescuers Down Under. It completely changes it, which is cool because we're sitting now knowing the rich animation that Pixar is producing now, and Disney animation because of that. And to watch this movie and you see, oh, here's the genesis of that. That's really cool.
There's so many heartfelt moments in this that really tug at you. Obviously, when McLeach says, "I got the father," and he pulls out his own feather, like you've already invested in this kid and this eagle that he saved. And now you're like, oh, and you've seen the baby eggs now. And you're like, where's your dad? Like, oh, my dad died too. And you're like, oh no. And so then when you finally meet McLeach, and he's already exactly the Disney and like bad guy in every way. He's
great, he talks
and great comes across, great villain, just legitimately scared of him and his what is that, car, his tank, whatever that cage thing is.
Like bouncing through the outback, and yeah. So there, good.
It definitely went to another level though when he is throwing knives against this map with Cody like sitting on the ground, and you're like, whoa, this is intense. Watching these knives being thrown at this little
boy. It's almost Sykes level from Oliver and Company. Almost.
Yes, this might be a transition moment to where it's still intense, but it's not the. There's actually, I don't think there was any. Was there any cigarettes in this movie? Have we started to transition away from the smoking era? Are we on the transition out?
I think we're on the transition out. Yeah,
that's the only thing he was missing was a cigar. It was a cigarette to tell you this guy,
which is really, really good.
I have a super random maybe I should put this at the end, but super random question about the physics of mice traveling on fireflies. So in the moment where Jake is taking them to where this kid is at, we see them first wrangle the snake, and then they take the snake, and that worked. And they take the snake through it. But then the next moment we cut to, and they're riding fireflies? The mice are way bigger than fireflies. How does the, I know that it's not supposed to, I'm not supposed to turn my brain off on that, but I'm just like, how does that work?
Maybe fireflies are like ants, where they can carry like 10 times the amount of their weight, right? We learned that in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
That was a random aside, but now since we're talking about animals and different things like that.
So speaking of animals, I love the scene when all in his kind of like jail cell,
yes,
with all of the different animals and characters and the crazy, like schizophrenic, almost like lizard that is, mm-hmm, in there. Just, mm-hmm, like, it's just fun. It's just, I love the layers, Frank, of characters.
Frank the lizard, Frank, the spaz, Frank, yeah, lizard. One random thing, I noticed in there, there's one little animal. So all the cages are kind of patchworked together. Some of them feel bigger, but then they've got like holes in them and stuff like that. And this is the level of detail. There's some little tiny creature underneath a like stool that has barbed wire around it. That was the most interesting, like, whoa, this, like they took so much detail to do different cages and harness restraints on all of these different animals. And there's literally just a stool, and around its legs is barbed wire. And there's like a little tiny creature. It's not a koala. It's something else that's sitting down there. I'm like, man, what little level of detail? I wonder who was sitting there in the room. Like, what are all the different cages that we could put these animals in? But you're right. They're trying to get out of there, and they're trying to get the keys. It was so inventive, and all the different pieces that they tied together. And then Frank is just like the helpless Frank, just running around and can't just put the keys in the right way the whole time.
What did you think of the ending? I mean, it's a pretty epic climax with the dangling over the crocodiles and everything.
Oh man, that kind of gets into our parenting side of this, where the whole time he's in just epic, from the moment he leaves his house, he's just in epic peril at all times. Like,
so there's no explanation, to go back to the beginning of the movie. We're kind of jumping here, right? He can just talk to animals.
What? That's what I wanted to get to. He's got no explanation. Snow White-ish level, but and it's not consistent. He's breaking that. In a lot of these animal-driven movies, the animals can talk to each other, but the adults don't talk to the animals. And he breaks that. He's legitimately talking
the only
to
one.
Kangaroos. He's legitimately talking to whatever. And McLeach talks to Joanna, but she doesn't talk back. And so they're not talking, just talking like you would talk to your dog or whatever. Joanna's not using words to talk to back. What happened there? Like, I didn't think it was needed.
It's the same. It's the same in the original movie, The Rescuers. And I can't remember the little girl's name rescue. But she can talk to all the animals and insects and stuff. But
do you think it's just that? Do you think it's that level of like childlike faith and belief that
Penny,
they're just kind of Penny where they're lining you up to go like, this is the main person, but they've got such a good heart and good soul that they haven't gone through all of the thing. I mean, a lot of the kids have gone through a lot, but they haven't lost that childlike wonder. So that childlike wonder enables you to speak to animals.
Maybe. Like, I think that's one of the things that I loved so much about this movie as a kid. And maybe we'll get into the parenting aspects of this. You know, especially in the summer, I would leave the house early in the morning and be outside all day long, all summer long, doing who knows what in the backyard, building things. I had a dirt bike, and across the street from us was like a cornfield, or actually it was an unused cornfield because they were about to put houses there, but it took them forever to develop. So I was just like riding my bike through there, just like up to shenanigans, doing who knows what. And as long as I was home for lunch and dinner, like, I was good. Like, that was the 90s, right? That's how you were a kid in the 90s.
And that's why you love DuckTales so much.
Yeah, that's why I love DuckTales so much.
Not that, and I wasn't, but yeah.
So I look at like this and like Cody leaving in the morning and running out into the mm-hmm. woods and being with all the animals and stuff is like, that is like childhood dream for me. Like, love. and still to this day, like, what do I want to do when I have free time? Let's go camping in the woods and let's just go and enjoy, you know, nature and be out on an adventure. That sense of unbridled adventure as a kid is what just resonated so deeply with me. And it's funny, like, still to this day, very much so feel that.
I definitely got a big scare as a parent when the first thing he does, well, he goes and talks to the animals and then immediately scales bear, like, with no harnesses, no, not just with his finger, like this 1,000 feet tall cliff to go find this eagle. I'm like, what is happening right now?
That's, I know. Like, I was thinking that Nat Geo documentary, Free Solo, with
Free
the guy.
Solo, who, that's,
yeah. I'm like, Cody did this way before you, dude. Come on.
You're just pulling a Cody here, man. This is not impressive. I've seen this act before.
Yeah. So, not directly related to the rescuers, but kind of connected. I thought this was an interesting tidbit of history that I came across. So, when the rescuers came out, they re-released it in 1983 to kind of restir interest in it. Was the first time since 1950. That Mickey Mouse had a theatrical release. Because you know how Disney always puts a short in front of their feature things? So Mickey had Mickey's Christmas Carol was the short before the 1983 theatrical release of The Rescuers. And the second time Mickey got a theatrical release since the 1950s was The Rescuers Down Under. The Prince and the Pauper came out before this.
Ah, interesting.
I you would have assumed like Mickey Mouse would be like coming out like every decade at least, but they hadn't put him in theaters since the 1950s.
And they haven't really done that much since. There hasn't really been a Mickey related.
There was one movie before Tangled, because Tangled was the 50th movie. So yes, they had done a special one with that. But yeah, You assume, you know, Mickey would be out there more. I just thought that was kind of an interesting little Rescuers Mickey history there. Sorry to bore you with my
No, you're all nerd-em. Good. We have to make sure we talk about the music at some point in this, because that's a recurring theme throughout all of the movies we've been watching. The theme song, the Rescuers theme song, is very Indiana Jones-ish inside of it. But man, when they're underneath his moving cage truck, whatever thingy, McLeach's, whatever that thing is, the cage.
Yeah.
When they're underneath and they're hanging on underneath, like, that had the most connection with me. And you hear that song to Indiana Jones because of the Jones like falling underneath the car, comes back up on the other side, and he's still holding on. I was like, yes, this is what I remember. And then when they come to the rescue to save him from the rapids, I just love that tune that they have for the Rescuers that I believe that they started in the first one as well.
Yeah, this movie just hits on several kind of key things where you get solid music,
adventure,
good characters, overall just kind of, you know, the animation is really strong and they keep the story moving. The pacing is just so well done.
International, which is always a plus, an international story.
Makes it really fun. So what would be your fruit snack rating? How many fruit snacks out of 5 would you give The Rescuers Down Under?
I mean, this is getting upgraded again to gummy worms, 5 gummy worms for me, since that's my favorite childhood snack. We're going all the way up to gummy worms, and it's going to be 5 for me.
I'd be right there with you. I would say 5 gummy worms as well. Like, this is just a solid movie. It does not get the credit that it is due. I think when people look back on the Disney decade, the Renaissance. This was actually the worst performing box office movie of the whole Disney decade, which is
only
why,
goes up from here.
Yeah, you know, you have the little, you know, people look back in Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, all that, but this is kind of sandwiched right in there, and it's sad that it gets passed over because I actually think it's better than many of them.
Yes.
It's not my favorite, but it's in my top three favorite Disney.
Is it on your Mount Rushmore? We should definitely start doing that. Your Mount Rushmore of Disney
movies so you get
from
four.
Your childhood. You have four.
Yeah. Of the Renaissance of the 90s, theatrically released.
Did you get to see this in theaters? When you were four? When you were three?
No.
That's another parenting thing for another day.
I will let you know which of these is my first in theater experience when we get to it. Spoiler alert, it's not that cool.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about unintended moral consequences of this story. As I've been sitting here thinking about it, the thing that comes to my mind more than anything is grown-ups are oblivious and don't know anything. So we have to rely on animals to protect our children.
Yeah. I think you see. Also, they are gullible, right? Oh, we just found a random backpack in the river. He must have been eaten by crocodiles.
And they never showed the mom's face. I love that. They just cut off her face. It's got a very Charlie Brown's mom situation, but without the wah, 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 wah.
And we never see a dad. So we kind of get the assumption.
Well, he says my dad's gone.
I don't have
too.
A dad either.
I don't have a dad too.
Did the kids watch it with you?
No, this is one a couple of these I had to watch late because of just timing and stuff like that. And so I wasn't able to, but I am excited to show this to my son. I'm not sure. I don't think
Lewis
we've watched this
loved
one.
Loved it. He was just kind of like bright-eyed the whole way through. There's some moments of just kind of like running around as they're running around. You know how kids begin
they act it out.
They act out what they see, you know, on the screen. So he's definitely had a few moments in this movie of doing that.
So what's the what happens if his parents aren't dead? I mean, it's kind of becoming the same thing over and over again. Is like
you got to remove
parental supervision.
Or both, yeah, if there's parental supervision, none of this happens.
Is he? But that's the other unintended consequence of if there's parents. That eagle, which is trapped at the beginning, is done. It's cooked. Yeah. It's done before they even start. So that is a positive in the sense of like we now the Marahute, I think I'm saying that correctly, now has a life beyond.
Right.
Saves the egg. There's multiple lives were saved if this plan goes correctly. With a little Harry Potter reference.
I think for dad tips. Oh, seriously, this is kind of one of the first moments you see Disney taking a more serious tone, at least for like messaging, you know, what is a theme of a movie. And I think it kind of shows you the importance of letting your kids know the value of animals, of nature, of creation. I know that's something that, you know, my parents instilled in me that I try and instill in my kids, like, yeah, you know, the world
conservationist
around us
a little bit.
Yeah. Conservationism is a,
I know you have the license plate for conservationist, the voluntary tax as your father calls it.
I do.
Voluntary tax.
I
Shout
think
out
that
to
there
Ed
is
Ferguson and his YouTube channel.
I think that there are non-extreme ways, because there's definitely people who take this to kind of the extreme, but there, you know, there's just everyday things that we can do to take care of the world around us. And I think that's kind of also maybe Cody and the Rescuers Down Under and growing up on Captain Planet gave me a little bit of this desire to be concerned about conservation. You know, I wouldn't say I'm a conservationist, but to be concerned about it. I think this is a fun movie to be kind of able to introduce that to kids of just saying, hey, yeah, when we can, we should do what's possible to us to take care of animals and nature around us.
Gotcha. So that's it for this episode. Eddie, what is the question we are asking our listeners to answer for this week's poll question?
So I want to know, would you allow your child to play freely in the dangerous Australian outback?
There's only one right answer to this, but we want to see how many of you.
You see, I kind of loaded it ever so slightly.
Loaded it a little bit.
Just a little bit. But yeah, just to kind of get and give us your comments and stuff like that back on it. I think that would be really fun. You can go to our website, honeywemade.com/listener. We'd love to hear from you about that.
So thank you for listening to this episode. Please subscribe to on wherever you get podcasts at. We also have all these episodes up on YouTube as well. If you'd like to watch our faces and our hands as we as Eddie is very
JB's face, Eddie's hands.
Yes, exactly. I was gonna say I'm very prolific with my hands, but Eddie's more of a tight-lipped, like he just like sits on his hands most of the time to bring it down at least 50%.
As Glenn Close said in season 5 of The West Wing, I gesticulate wildly.
Of course you memorized that part. But Eddie, what's our next movie we're going to be hitting up next time?
We move into 1991 with White Fang, a live action film released by Walt Disney Picture Studios.
I think I've got some ideas of where you would rate this. So I'm interested to see how this conversation is going to go, but thanks for listening. But I gotta go on a Target run, so I'm gonna have to head out here soon.
Actually, we're making a Target run today as well.
Dual Target runs. Okay, ready, set, go.